Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I am fantastic and glad I've never had to engage in any of any type. They seem complicated.
I mean,
don't need somebody singing at me all the time.
If you think this is not how most nannies work, I just want to clear that up right from the
start.
Really?
That seems unusual. I figured The Simpsons would only exhibit it in the most realistic possible way.
I would not call this episode very realistic, but I would call it very entertaining. Hey guys, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/thesimpsonsshow for only $2 a month to gain access to all of our bonus content. We have a person to thank. Matt?
Yes?
Dankmus? Thank you, Dankmus.
Thank you, person whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce.
I believe it is someone's internet handle.
Ah, okay. Of course,
it could be any of those things, but I'm using phonetics and doing the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
You can also give us a review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, give us 5 stars, tell your friends. All those cool things helps us out. This week's episode is Simpson Califragilistic Expiala Annoy Gruntius, or simply Simpsons Crowd. Simpson Califragilistic Expiala Docious. Get it?
You gotta pause for that.
Docious. Yeah. Just docious. Episode 3G03, originally aired February 7th, 1997. Written by Al Jean and Mike Reese, showrunners. And Al Jean is current showrunner. And directed by Chuck Sheets. Finished 38th in the ratings. A Nielsen rating of 8.8. Approximately 8.5 million viewing households. Third highest rated show on Fox that week, following The X-Files and King of the Hill.
Well, at least it's, you know, being beaten by good programs.
I think, was Melrose Place in Beverly Hills 90210 just gone by now? 97?
You know, I think they were starting to wind down, if I remember correctly. But, you know, I was a teenager. I had other concerns at the time.
Like reading books?
Reading books, watching Simpsons episodes, and trying not to look too stupid. Which I failed miserably at.
Yeah, that's pretty much all teenagers. The chalkboard gag. Ooh, there's a chalkboard gag. I will not hide the teacher's Prozac. We never got that episode. And the couch gag, the living room is empty, and Homer and the family are locked outside. They can't get in. It's tricky.
Oh, shucks.
Shucks.
Yeah, you should have the key under the mat.
We get the full intro for this episode because it ran short. So they were.
Which is kind of weird. I feel like it seems like this episode's kind of long, but maybe the animation was a little tougher and all the songs.
Well, I think from what I've read and heard is that they thought the music would take up a lot of time, but it didn't take up enough time. So they had to pad it out a little bit with the intro, and I'm guessing is the reason for a lot of the television gags. Because we got a pretty large part of the episode is a lot of cutaway gags to TV. And that's where we start. Yeah. That's where the episode begins, is the family watching Krusty hosting at the Apollo Theater, the Krusty Comedy Classic.
Yeah.
KKK. That's not good.
That ain't good.
Yeah, that. And we get Krusty being not a lot of shoe-based puns in his comedy, in the Krusty Comedy Classic. Not great. Not great.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the Simpsons are enjoying it, but they are eating dinner in front of the television with their TV trays. Marge is being tasked to get up and get stuff for them. Come back, get up. You know, they're not being very nice to Marge. I don't know. I think what is the default level of treatment towards Marge from the rest of the family?
It's a little better than this, but not by much. I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I think from the age of like 7 on, if I wanted something, I got it my dang self. I mean,
I think it is always predicated on my mother's mood. You know, if she was nice and happy, she'd happily go get me something. You know, if she was not nice and happy, if she was having a rough day, I just didn't ask. I walked to the kitchen. But
right. You walked your happy butt to the kitchen.
Happy butt.
Mm-hmm.
Language.
Totally not that.
Your language.
I know. I'm just a potty mouth already.
I know. But we see this treatment is having an ill effect on Marge.
Ah, could you get me some milk?
Can't you get it yourself?
No, that's okay. I'll just go without liquid.
Oh, All right. I'll get your milk.
Thank you.
Does anyone else want anything while I'm up?
No.
Marge, give me a beer.
Mom?
What?
There's a hare in my soup, but I'll just eat around it.
What kind of hare?
Well, it's blue, 6 feet long.
Ew!
It's my hare. Excuse me.
Your mother seems really upset about something. I better go have a talk with her during the commercial.
Yeah, I hate to pull back the curtain, but anyone who's ever lived with somebody who has, you know, long hair that's even remotely a decent length, like, you know, maybe a foot or more, yeah, you find those hairs everywhere. Marge should not be embarrassed. You know, hair is just falling out all the time if you have long hair, apparently.
Yes, it is. One hair is not an issue, but I'm not going to try and argue that the rest of the time when we see Marge is anything normal, because we do get a brief appearance of the second appearance of Gerald Ford on The Simpsons. This time he's on Krusty's show. That's a pretty
talk about the Boy Scouts.
Yeah,
which is a big thing to him.
Yeah, Krusty makes fun of him. Another more television gags. But then we get a long montage of Marge losing her hair to the song Hair from the musical Hair. And, she's everywhere she goes, her hair falling out all constantly. And you can, I think it really, this episode is not very realistic. It feels like the Springfield Files to me. It feels in that same kind of very loose, weird reality where they basically have Mary Poppins on their show and just kind of change the rules to adhere to basically Mary Poppins rules instead of the Simpsons rules.
That's true. At least in the Springfield Files, no one flew as they do, as Mary Poppins does in this one. Sorry, Sherry Bobbins.
She's an original creation. There were aliens, literal aliens appearing in the Springfield Files. So I'm not going to necessarily say that they're incredibly disparate, but that's what's interesting to me, that is that they do basically change the rules to Mary Poppins rules, but they still ground this episode in the fact that Marge is honestly kind of disheartening and creepy to see Marge lose her hair like this.
Well, especially when Homer pictures her with his comb over. Oof.
Yeah. Speaking of, they are in bed, and Homer wants to get a little bit amorous, he sees that Marge's hair is in really rough shape, and she decides to go to see Dr. Hibbert.
Come on. There's no need for that, Baba Mabushka.
All right. But don't be shocked.
Oh, there's no way I could...
Homie, I'm losing my hair.
No, sweetie. Don't worry about a thing. I'll teach you to comb it over so no one can tell. Just like my hair.
Mrs. Simpson, there's no physical reason why your hair should be falling out. This thing has me buffaloed.
Phone call, Mrs. Simpson, lines 1 and 2.
Oh, I need a glass of milk.
Me too.
I think the problem may be stress.
Maybe.
And obviously the solution is child abuse. I mean, come on. them get their own milk, that's rough, but that's really the only solution she has.
Yes, child abuse is making children walk to the kitchen. That's really rough on them.
In their opinion.
That is why I really like this episode a lot, in that it is examining what is the base level of The Simpsons. Who are what is this family? How do they exist? And if you try and put them in a different world, and you try and put them in a different rule set, like Mary Poppins rules, what happens? I think that's what's really fascinating to me about this episode is, I mean, it is funny and I love the songs, but the thing that engages me the most with it is you take Sherry Bobbins, and who is basically a magical lady, and you bring her into The Simpsons, and what happens? And it's these weird culture clashes about it's weird meta-fictional exploration. And I mean, the way The Simpsons work is, yeah, the real answer is you get Bart and Lisa and Homer to do their own work around the house sometimes. Give Marge a break.
Yeah.
But they're not a real family. They're fictional characters. And
so you can abuse them.
Well, the amount of change that you can enforce on a television show is mostly minimal, at least from episode to episode. There's not a lot of things that are going to drastically change. And to do that kind of changes the how the show functions. So you can't. And I think that is another layer of narrative that I really, really like. But so Marge's solution is not to, again, not to change Lisa and Bart's behavior or Homer's behavior. It is to get a nanny.
Which will totally help out.
I mean, I'm sure it would help. It'd also be very expensive.
But how could they afford it?
All they have to do is Lisa has to give up Malibu Stacy clothing, which I can't. How much money are you spending on doll clothing, Lisa? That's a substantial chunk. I mean, I spent a lot of my parents' money on very dumb things when I was a child, so I can't.
Oh, yeah.
Blame it. Warhammer.
You played Warhammer? Wow.
Yes.
You're a brave soul.
I didn't really play Warhammer. I bought Warhammer and then painted them. And then painted a lot of Warhammer. That's a hole. Don't go into that hole. It's a dangerous hole. Bart gives up.
We'll lose a lot of money.
Bart takes up and then gives up smoking, which is the hardest thing a person can do.
It's true.
And Homer gives up his Civil War Recreation Society. I would like more about Springfield Civil War Recreation Society.
It's like a fun group.
I need more about that. Give us an episode about that, Simpsons. Listen, I know you're listening.
Yeah.
But they audition a lot of nannies. Homer believes all of them are men in drag, a la Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Well, I don't know if it actually features that, or Homer just thinks that it features a lot of that.
I mean, I think that he's seen Mrs. Doubtfire, so he assumes that all elderly women,
older nannies, yeah,
our nannies are Robin Williams or other men in drag. I assume Homer does have there's a very fragile thin line between fantasy and reality for Homer. And the fact that Sherry Bobbins appears very, very close to this doesn't really help. I mean, I don't blame him. Like, I do not blame Homer thinking that television and movie rules apply to his reality when oftentimes they really do.
That's true.
I mean, he had the X-Files appear. He has Sherry Bobbins appear.
So he's used to magical people in his world.
Yeah, exactly. He can't help it. Kearney is also one of the candidates. I think Kearney would have done a good job, honestly.
I really do. I mean, Bart already is scared of him, so that's the first ingredient you need.
I know, keeping Bart in line is probably the hardest bit. I think Lisa, as long as she obeyed his rules, Kearney would probably just leave her alone.
Hmm.
You need someone tough but fair. You need someone to hammer these kids in the line.
Or just, tough. Fairness is,
not as important?
Not as important. Okay. At least not to Kearney anyway.
Oh, I mean, that's true. But Marge is about to give up. She doesn't, maybe take Homer out of the equation, Marge. That'd be my advice. But she's down on herself. You know, her hair is still a mess, and she doesn't think they're going to find a nanny. Lisa and Bart come in with a song about who to look for.
Well, I'd like to hear your suggestions.
Maestro, if you please. If you wish to be our sitter, please be sweet and never bitter. Help us with math and book reports.
Might I add, eat my shorts.
Bart is cutting through the treacle.
If Maggie's fussy, don't avoid her.
Let me get away with Moiter.
Teach us songs and magic tricks.
Might I add, no fat chicks.
Homer!
The nanny we want is kindly and sage.
And one who will work for minimum wage.
Hurry, nanny, things are grim.
I'll do it!
Anyone but him.
Well, it's important you establish your bass lines.
I love all the music in this episode. It is all, vaguely based on Mary Poppins songs. I mean, I think the most Simpsons songs are often in that lineage of songwriting, of film songwriting, of mm-hmm. they owe a lot to old musicals and Disney kind of is still, I think the Disney style musical, like Disney's the only company that still does them, honestly. Like that, like they used to be a,
yeah.
I mean, there's not very many live action musicals that come out in wide releases anymore. When they do, they're pretty notable. The Simpsons just kind of follow in that lineage, and I like all the music in this episode. I think it is, I don't know, I saw a lot of complaints on the news group about the music, and
why? I mean,
they don't like music, man.
They don't have music in a TV show that's not, you know, already popular music, you know?
I don't know. I think this is some of the best examples of good, good, like, thematically, like, hey, we're doing a Mary Poppins episode. Let us go full on. I mean, you have to have the music if you're doing that. And that's what they do. And it works really well. A lot of the musical bits in this are animated by Eric Stefani. Yes. Who was a member of No Doubt and also worked on The Simpsons, which I think is pretty well widely known. But he did a lot of animation for musical numbers, which makes sense. And after they sing the song, a rap tap tapping comes on the door and we meet Cherry Bobbins.
Hello, I'm Sherry Bobbins.
Did you say Mary Pop?
No, I definitely did not. I'm an original creation like Ricky Rouse and Monald Muck. Now, as your nanny, I'll do everything from telling stories to changing diapers.
Put me down for one of each.
Oh, Grandpa.
Well, I'm sure he would need one of each.
Yeah, he probably would. That's a different job, though.
That's true. Nannies are generally not for older folks.
No, I think when you say nanny, there's a particular connotation towards young children, taking care of children, not in the household, not necessarily taking care of an elderly adult.
Right.
But with that, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, Homer is basically giving Sherry Bobbins an interview. Of course, Homer has no idea what the heck he's doing. He asks her who her previous employer was, and she gives Lord and Lady Huffington of Sussex, I believe is the name she gives, which, of course, Homer thinks they know.
Carl. No, it's Carl.
Oh, Carl. Okay. That's who Homer thinks it was. It was Carl, because, you know, he thought Carl's last name was Huffington of Sussex instead of, oh, God, what is Carl's actual last name?
Carlson.
Carlson, that's right, because he's Icelandic. So, you know, he was close. He was close. But during the interview, Sherry Bobbins gets the speed treatment from Bart.
I have a question. Pop quiz, hotshot. I'm supposed to be doing my homework, but you find me upstairs reading a play, dude. What do you do? What do you do?
I make you read every article in that magazine, including Norman Mailer's latest claptrap about his waning libido.
Ooh, she is tough.
Well, we were saying earlier, toughness. At least Sherry Bobbins will probably have the fairness that Kearney would not, but, you know.
She takes the challenge laid down by Bart and picks it up. She's not afraid. She has no fear.
No.
Sherry Bobbins knows no fear.
That's true. She has dealt with she has danced with the Bart devil in the pale moonlight before, obviously. But at this point, she takes the children upstairs after Marge says, "You're hired." Her butt whacks the banister on the way up because she does the Mary Poppins thing where she sits on the banister and somehow goes up, which is all right. Sure. If she flew in on an umbrella, might as well.
It's just low flying.
Yeah.
It's not, uh-huh. I mean, sure. They, and they say they tried to not include a lot of magic in this episode.
Well, she defies gravity. It's her only power.
I guess, I mean, that's the most, mostly what her magic, if we do see Mary Poppins style magic, is mostly just flight, you know, the normal. Yeah. And they attribute to her umbrella. So maybe it's just a magic umbrella. But she doesn't.
Maybe she's not magic, but it's magic.
Who knows?
Yeah. But once they get up there, Homer and Marge are very excited. But the kids do not want to clean because they are kids. Of course they don't want to clean. They have better things to do. But Sherry Bobbins introduces them to a better way of cleaning.
If there's a task that must be done, don't turn your tail and run. Don't pout, don't sob. Just do a half-assed job. If you cut every corner, it is really not so bad. Everybody does it, even Mom and Dad. If nobody sees it, then nobody gets mad.
It's the American way.
The policeman on the beat needs some time to rest his feet.
Fighting crime is not my cup of tea.
And the clerk who runs the store can charge a little more for meat.
For meat.
And milk.
And milk.
From 1984. If you cut every corner, you'll have more time for play.
It's the American way.
So, yes.
Little Maggie popping out is really good. I really like that little touch.
Yeah. Well, they have to make sure you know she's not actually hurt. You can't do that.
Maggie is not of this earth. She can't be injured by mortal means.
That's true. But she can definitely injure other people.
I mean, it has happened multiple times where she has both injured and saved Homer from injury. So, you know, she's an agent of chaos.
Homer is her plaything and no one else's.
I think she is a neutral, chaotic neutral, I would say, Maggie.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. The next day we see the Cherry Bobbins takes the kids to the park where everything has been returned to the, late 19th century, where, you know, the children are being nice. Even Nelson seems to love Cherry Bobbins.
Picture some posies.
He pictures some posies and she says nice things about him and causes him to blush. Because Nelson blushes for Cherry Bobbins.
Well, I mean, she is Cherry Bobbins. Aww.
That's true. But there's one person in the park who doesn't enjoy Cherry Bobbins, our good friend Willie.
I'm a maniac, that's for sure. And I'm dancing like I've never danced before. Gah! That's the stuff. Yeah, thank you ungrateful bass. Cherry Bobbins, is that you?
Hello, Willie. You'd know her?
Hey, Cherry Bobbins and I were engaged to be wed back in the old country. Then she got her eyesight back. Suddenly the ugliest man in Glasgow wasn't good enough for her.
It's good to see you, Willie.
That's not what you said the first time you saw me.
Oh, poor Willie, the ugliest man in Glasgow.
That's a really good line. It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's really good. I don't know what it is, but the way they Mary Poppinsify the Simpsons universe in this episode it feels right to me. I don't know why, like, because it doesn't make any sense. And there's certain other episodes that do the same thing, and it doesn't work for me. And this time it does. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the inherent cheeriness of Mary Poppins. Maybe that's what it is.
Probably. I mean, I feel like that's the one thing that elevates this episode is that you take a character like Mary Poppins, who is perpetually cheerful, and the Simpsons are able to wear her down. And that's kind of what makes it memorable.
Yeah, and I think you have to have this kind of... I honestly wish there was a little bit more of this, of Cherry Bobbins visiting other parts of town and seeing how they... Like, I would love to see her go to Moe's. Like, I would, you know, mm-hmm. Or go to the plan, or, you know, see her visit Springfield at large. I think I would have sacrificed some of the television bits, you know, them, Charles Bronson and Andy Griffith later on. I think I would have preferred to see more character stuff with Cherry Bobbins and how she's reacting to Springfield as a whole, but... I think it has to have, by setting her up in this whole reality, this is hard work talking. It sets up the ending even better. I think that's why I like it a lot.
That's true. At this point, we also walk by Principal Skinner, who is attempting to sell Jimbo, which I guess is legal in Springfield and in Mississippi, which I totally believe. Going to Mississippi is like going back in time probably 30, 40 years.
30 years ago isn't that long ago, Matt.
I know, but it's enough. It's enough that you notice it and are scared, because no one is safe in Mississippi. Surprise, every horror movie ever has not taken place there.
Well, you just drive through Mississippi. You don't drive to Mississippi.
Well, you do if you have family who lives there.
Sounds like you have a personal problem.
Indeed. While they're in the park, Cherry Bobbins also convinces Mr. Burns to fly a kite by, you know, telling him how much fun it is. And it is, until he hits a electrical transformer, which causes his heart to begin beating again.
I thought it was a lightning bolt.
Maybe it was a lightning bolt. I don't know.
There's a storm. A storm comes in, and he gets hit.
He gets, of course, hit by lightning. That's Ben Franklin.
Yeah, exactly.
He gets Franklin, y'all.
He gets Franklin.
Mm-hmm. Which brings him back. At this point, things are going so well with Sherry Bobbins that Marge's hair has grown back. It's so big and strong it can support a beach umbrella, which apparently turns Homer on, which is only a little weird knowing Homer.
That is a quite unique fetish.
Well, Robbie, you obviously haven't been on the internet very much.
Beach umbrellas suspended in a person's hair is a little bit unique, I would just say.
All right, fine. There's probably only like a few thousand people in the world who would be into that.
Probably only a few thousand.
Well, given 8 billion people are closing in on, you know. But at this point, Sherry Bobbins is exhausted and tries to take the kids to bed. But of course, they're kids. They have never entered energy and they want another song, to which Sherry Bobbins grudgingly obliges them.
It's 8 o'clock, children. Time for bed.
But we're not sleepy.
Sing us a song, Sherry Bobbins.
Yeah, sing us a song.
I've been singing you songs all day. I'm not a bloody jukebox. Oh, all right.
In front of a tavern, flat on his face, a booze hound named Barney is pleading his case.
Buy me a beer, $2 a glass. Come on, help me, I'm freezing my ass. Buy me brandy, a snifter of wine. Who am I kidding? I'll drink turpentine.
Move it, you drunk, or I'll blast your rear end.
I found $2.
Then come in, my friend.
And so let us leave on this heartwarming scene.
Can I be a booze hound?
Not till you're 15.
So, yes, in the Simpson family, you become a booze hound when you are 15 somehow.
I mean, it's
that's when Homer starts feeding it to you.
Well, Bart also says as soon as he can steal a car, he's out of here.
Well, that's true. So you get hooked somehow.
I mean, it's the same. It's roughly the same time, 15, 16, you get your permit, you go steal a car, and then you become a booze hound. So a clear life.
To be fair, you can steal a car whenever you want.
Yeah, but if you're a 9-year-old, in Bart's case, a 10-year-old boy driving a car, I mean, I guess Bart on the road, he did drive a car for quite a long time and no one did anything. But in general, I think if you're a 10-year-old boy and driving a car, it's a little bit more suspicious than a teenage boy driving a car. It's not immediately going, oh, that's just his car. He's driving around. It's, oh, he stole
a
car. Again, the way they parody the Poppins style songs is great. And it also adds in, this is... I think we are starting to see, I mean, all these songs are kind of, are, you know, the Simpsons' perspective on a Mary Poppins universe. You know, it's do a half-assed job. It is, hey, we're going to have a lovely lullaby featuring Barney the alcoholic. It is, it is, you know, the Victorian style time period in Springfield, but with the Springfield characters filling it, like Willie is the ugliest man in Glasgow. He's not the charming Dick Van Dyke as Bert. You know, they do their own take, but it feels very much like Sherry's willpower, her fortitude, her constitution is breaking a little bit by this point already.
Well, yeah.
Already, like, she's they ask her for a lullaby, and she's like, she snaps at them and then acquiesces. You know,
we don't really get a sense of the passage of time, but I feel like that was pretty quick.
Yeah, I think it was longer. It's not just a day. I have a feeling it's more than just that she was. I mean, it's certainly in the third act. I think it's longer. She's been there longer than a day, but is just, it doesn't, I don't think it takes long. I don't think she's been there very long. It's just, it is the effect of Springfield on a person from a different universe, a different reality.
Springfield will grind you down.
Yes, it doesn't, Springfield doesn't work. Like, in Springfield is every town USA, except that's not good, generally. Like, it, for a person, especially for a Sherry Bobbins, who ostensibly operates on Mary Poppins rules, where everything is good and there's always a happy ending.
Yep, not in the Springfield world. You can't just
cross over and expect it to work out.
No, you cannot, unfortunately.
Another lovely song, everyone. Though. It's a great song. They're all great.
Yeah, yes, they are expertly played and sung. They're quite amazing, to be honest. Then we cut forward to an indeterminate time in the future, where the family is sitting down to dinner. They make several British food jokes about kippers and blood sausage and,
blood sausage is great. I will not hear any affront against blood sausage.
I have never tasted it. I'm okay whether it be good or not.
No, blood sausage
is... I don't know what a kipper is either.
Blood sausage is amazing.
It's all the extra blood they add, right?
If it tastes like blood, I would not enjoy it. It doesn't taste like blood. It's like super umami.
Well, I can't taste umami, so I'm going to have to trust you on that.
You don't like steak?
It tastes the same as chicken to me.
You're a weirdo, Matt. Kipper is fish.
Oh, kipper is fish. Okay.
It's a small oily fish.
Oh, okay. It's like anchovies.
Yeah, kind of. I think kipper are a little bit bigger. They're herrings, so I think they're bigger than anchovies, but they are technically the same kind of principle. You know, it's just like, hey, we just throw a lot of oil on us, make it very salty and oily and fishy.
Fair enough. But the family is basically acting like, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. You say the acting, this is all put upon? This is all.
Sorry, no. Basically, the family is treating each other with love and respect the way an ideal family would. At this point, Sherry Bobbins she feels like her work is done. But unfortunately, as soon as she leaves, the family returns to their Springfield ways, and Bart is strangling Homer. Maggie is left alone with a pot and a spoon to bang it with. The house is a mess. So basically what we've learned is the only reason the Simpsons were ever civilized is when acted upon by an outside force. So Sherry Bobbins resigns herself to being here forever, unpacks her things, and we go to a very, very sad commercial break.
I wouldn't call it very sad. I rather enjoy it that in that they it's just not who they are. And I think we get to that in the third act. They kind of focus in on that. But the Simpsons just aren't. They are, they've been over. This is the eighth season of the show where we are, and that was their identity. Really, especially early on, the first few seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it still is to an extent their identity. I don't think they've ever fully shaken it. You know, they are the dysfunctional middle class American family. They love each other and they try really hard, but they still fight and argue and don't always get along. And they, in a lot of, along several other shows in that time period, they showed a family that felt real to the average television viewer. You know, it felt like, no, this is what I, when I had a family like this, and this is what we were. You know, we weren't the sitcom families from the 50s and 60s. It wasn't all white picket fences and cheery endings and stuff like this. It was people squabbling and there being, normal. That was normal, and it is normal. That is not the outsider. That is the actual normal American family. And Sherry Bobbins, in a certain way, represents that to me. She represents the outside. She represents that weird external force saying, here, no, you need to act good to each other. Here is how you do that. And she can't. It doesn't. You can't do that to The Simpsons. It doesn't. It makes the show not work anymore, for one.
Without that conflict, it's not as interesting.
No, and two, it is. She's... her when she comes to Springfield, the Mary Poppins rules don't work quite the way they should. I think that is, we are seeing the Sherry Bobbins magic just it's a little bit broken.
Well, it just can't stand up to the onslaught of the Springfield it's a nice way to put it, uncouthness.
Onslaught from Marvel?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, the combination of Magneto and Charles Xavier.
Mm-hmm. Psychic force.
Exactly.
Heroes Reborn. Exactly. Bad illustrations of Captain America.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, good. When we come back, the family is basically now, Sherry Bobbins is now just in Marge's role, you know, absorbing all the abuse and the mistreatment and the boss, like, just she's the one.
So she's basically like every maid slash nanny that exists in rich people's homes.
Yes, exactly. I don't think it's that strange. I think most nannies are kind of just like, hey, go, you're the nanny. You're getting paid. This is your job. You take care of us. It is a luxury that I don't understand. Again, it's still think even if Simpson sacrificed all that stuff, they couldn't afford it, but it doesn't matter, really.
No, it really does not.
And they are treating her like one. She's worn down. She tries, to get Homer to be his best self, and it doesn't work out.
Sherry Bobbins, I want another beer.
Well, you know, Homer, if there's a job that must be done, you'll find it's much more fun.
You'll find it's even more fun if you get it for me.
But the beer will taste more sweet if you get up off your seat.
Lady, the man asked for a beer, not a song.
Don't rate me for so.
Do re mi fa so.
I really like that little nod, which is, that's Sound of Music. That is not Mary Poppins, but it's still a nod to Julie Andrews, who apparently they had her do a line reading for this, and they preferred Maggie Roswell.
Wow.
I don't know what it was. Maybe it just they needed a little bit of they just need a little bit more comedic edge or something. Julie Andrews I would think would have the range to be able to play it more for laughs and do a little bit more of the parody. I don't know, but apparently, you know, Maggie Roswell does a tremendous job as Sherry Bobbins, so I can't complain. It just feels very strange to me that they could have had Julie Andrews do the part and they didn't. Maybe it just didn't work. Maybe they just for some reason it didn't click. I don't know. But we get more of those television bits in here. We get Charles Bronson replacing Andy Griffith, which that's I think the low point of this episode for me. Just not funny to me. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, Charles Bronson. Yeah,
So, if Charles Bronson existed in Mayberry, we have a lot bigger problem.
They have a lot of Charles Bronson jokes. I don't really like any.
Somebody on staff really enjoyed the Death Wish movies.
Yeah, which I don't really like Death Wish movies that much. They're not very charming to me. Like, if I want to see, I can go watch Dirty Harry movies, and I think, you know, Clint Eastwood has that charisma I can carry through it. Charles Bronson is kind of. I know he's purposely cold and stayed, but even still, it just doesn't do much for me. But then we also get the guest-directed Itchy and Scratchy with Quentin Tarantino, which I do like a lot, parodies Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Also, apparently they asked Quentin Tarantino to do his own voice, and he declined because he thought it was insulting.
Oh, come on.
And I don't know. I think if you asked 2017 Quentin Tarantino to do it, he would say yes, probably because he...
Yeah, that's probably true.
In the mid to late 90s, Quentin Tarantino probably was still too little self-serious. I mean, I think Quentin Tarantino is a little too self-serious, but I think probably 20 years later, he probably would be fine with it. But apparently he wears a bootleg Itchy and Scratchy shirt a lot, or has, because I think that might tell you that maybe he doesn't care that much. I mean, I think it honestly is pretty good parody of Quentin Tarantino, honestly. As the episode's kind of winding down, we see Sherry Bobbins, original creation, like Ricky Rouse and Model Muck, go around the family and try and, we get a little bit of solo time, just a tiny shred of it with each of the members. She goes to Bart, Bart's hurling cupcakes at the wall, which is, I don't know.
Like you do,
yeah, exactly.
It's a waste of cupcakes, but maybe they were like brand cupcakes or something.
Why would you make brand cupcakes?
I have no idea. People make some weird stuff.
Okay, a brand muffin? All right, I got it. Cupcake?
Okay, what's the difference between a brand muffin and a brand cupcake?
Icing?
Frosting on top.
Exactly. Why would you waste the frosting?
Well, I mean, maybe you're trying to get people to eat brand muffins, because no one wants them anyway.
Just give me a supplement. I don't want to eat. I can eat a good muffin or a good cupcake and then take a brand supplement, fiber, somewhere else. I don't need to eat bran.
Yeah.
Brand muffins. I don't like them, Matt. I'm taking a stand here.
All right, then. Good.
Good.
All right. This podcast is for the elimination of bran muffins.
Yeah.
For people who don't like them.
I think bran muffins are very of that time period thing as well. I do not see very many bran muffins anymore. I think most people realize, well, no, they're not very good. Let's not make them.
They're like cupcakes. We'll make them fruity and chocolatey.
Yeah. Hey, I want dessert for breakfast.
We already have pancakes and waffles and French toast. Let's add cake.
Yeah, I would like a cupcake for breakfast. Thank you very much. It has a fruit in it, therefore it's healthy.
Oh, you're making me hungry, man.
I know. But Bart rebuffs her. He's like, basically leave me alone. She goes to Lisa and tells her basically, go outside and experience the nice outdoors.
Lisa, don't sit in front of that telly like a fly stuck in a toffee. It's a great big world out there.
Been there, done it.
I know. We could have a tea party on the ceiling.
Shh, TV.
Oh, you people will be the death of me.
So her arc is now basically just copying Marge's. She's breaking down crying. She's not losing her hair, but she's still upset. She can't. She wants to change The Simpsons.
Yes, and good luck with that.
That is a thing you cannot do. It is a thing that is impossible. Right? That is
it's
what
not allowed. The producers won't allow it.
No, exactly. And that is what we're coming to is that, and I think they kind of acknowledge it in this last bit is that we can't change literally, and The Simpsons won't change, and any outside force that ever comes into a show like this can't change the show, and therefore I don't know why are they even here.
Is this supposed to be a meta episode on why they can't change it?
I think so. I think a little bit. I think of Sherry Bobbins as kind of the yin to Frank Grimes' yang. I feel very much like she is. Well, Frank Grimes is very much like from the real world. He is a real world dude, basically.
Right.
She is the opposite. She is this magical creation, this magical character from this another fictional universe where she has a happy ending. The end of Mary Poppins, everything works out. And things, the characters, the family is better at the end, right? It is, everything's happy.
So she leaves and they start doing their own chores for some reason.
Yes, exactly. But when you introduce that to Springfield, to The Simpsons, it doesn't work anymore. You can't do that because The Simpsons can't change. The Simpsons are a television show, for one. They're not going to change the status quo, especially in such a fundamental way. And The Simpsons see... that Sherry's breaking down. So to try and cheer her up, they sing her a song about how they're never going to change.
Sherry, you did the best you could, but you can't change this family. Neither can I. From now on, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the ride.
But haven't I taught you people anything?
Nope.
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 So you like it this way?
Indubitably. Around the house, I never lift a finger. As a husband and father, I'm subpar. I'd rather drink a beer than win Father of the Year. I'm happy with things the way they are.
I'm getting used to never getting noticed. I'm stuck here till I can steal a car.
The house is still a mess, and I'm going bald from stress. But we're happy just the way we are.
They're not perfect, but the Lord says love thy neighbor.
Shut up, Flanders.
Oakley, doakley, do.
Don't think it's sour grapes, but you're all a bunch of apes. And so I must be leaving you.
Goodbye, Sherry Bobbins.
Thanks for everything.
So long, Superman.
Do you think we'll ever see her again?
I'm sure we will, honey. I'm sure we will.
Well, so much for that. Although, to be fair, they were wrong that Marge learned something, and that's to not care, which I'm pretty sure most parents have to learn at some point. There is a limit to how clean their houses can be once you have kids.
Yeah, you just got to let yourself be desensitized to it and just like let a lot of it go and choose your battles. Yep. Choose your battles. Cherry Bobbins flies away on her umbrella, then gets sucked into a jet engine in the background and is dispersed as particulate.
Which just means they'll never have to make a sequel to this episode.
And another point of comparison, Frank Grimes, who also dies at the very end of an episode of his one episode. Cherry Bobbins is one, she is from a different universe, so her very presence in the Simpsons universe is a crime against nature.
Well, against their universe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like Superman Prime crossing over. You can't have multiple Supermen in the same place.
It's true. If she hadn't been taken care of by the dead end, America Chavez would have showed up and just had to drag her back to her real universe.
Oh no! Now we're crossing over and doing DC and Marvel and the Simpsons.
Oh hey,
and
that totally happens. There was an issue with Spider-Man where they went to the DC universe and it smelled funny. So you know,
I know.
Obviously,
but
they're in the same multiverse.
That's with a wink and a nod. That's not. I think that's the DC parody that Marvel does. I don't think that's the true DC universe. I think that is.
All right, fair enough.
The Marvel and DC share exactly one point of intersection with their universes, and that's in what was that called? That shared universe they did in the 90s where the characters met and crossed and they had combination characters?
I don't know.
What was that called? I can't remember. It was really bad. I remember it was bad.
So someday it's possible they'll also cross over. If Marvel ever does a crossover with the Power Rangers or the Ninja Turtles, then we'll know they're in the same multiverse because Batman crossed over with the Ninja Turtles and the Justice League are currently crossing over with the Power Rangers. So, you know, Marvel get the work.
Oh,
there.
God, comic books are terrible. But Sherry dies horribly. Really brutally. I mean, that's awful. And they just show it. It's not like
that's like Indiana Jones level.
Yeah, it really is really rough. Or she just gets sucked into an engine and just like poof like a pigeon. And again, she can't exist there. It's not even that she like, oh yeah, she exists and the family's happy in their current state. She literally they kill her because she can't exist.
She's too good for this world.
She is too good for this world. That is what this episode is telling us, that Cherry Bobbins is just too good for The Simpsons. And that ending song there lays it all out. It's the family just there. They're happy the way they are. And I think that is not a very not so subtle way of saying, we can't change. You don't work here. What is the point of you?
We reject you.
It is. It's like an organ transplant. That's what Cherry Bobbins is, and then the body of the Simpsons rejects her.
Yes. The Simpsons are the immune system of Springfield.
We're laying out a lot of heavy things today, Matt.
It's true. Bart is a killer T-cell.
That is a sentence I was not expecting to hear today, but here we are. I love this episode.
Does that make Roy immunosuppressant therapy?
No,
I mean,
that
episode's
no,
coming up. It's this season.
It's next. That's next, actually.
Oh my! Really? That's the next one.
That's the next
God.
Episode. So maybe we'll have to. Maybe we'll have to discuss further when we talk about Roy. But I love this episode. I love Cherry Bobbins. I think it has. I like it a lot more than the Springfield Files. Nothing against the Springfield Files, but I like the counterpoint of Cherry Bobbins and her weird roles of her own. Reality of her magic, of her cheeriness and her Britishness juxtaposed against the Springfield and the Simpsons universe. I love the songs. I think the television parody parts are a little weak at times.
Yeah, they seem out of place. They seem like, oh, we need to fill some time.
That's an
idea.
That is what they basically are. I think they're hit and miss. I love the itchy and scratchy Tarantino one. I think the Krusty thing is interesting in that it is Krusty doing stuff, but is the actual, yeah, Krusty's a washed-up comedian is like, yeah, kind of at this point, I'm already tired of that. The Charles Bronson thing does literally nothing for me, but yeah. Those are very
also
minor.
NYPD shoe, no thanks.
Yeah, no, I'll pass. They're minor quibbles. I think this episode I really, really enjoy. I think it is great. Matt's silent.
You're not going to get any argument from me if that's what you're waiting for. I think it's a great episode. I love it.
Okay. I don't know. It feels weird to me that this is written by Al Jean and Mike Reiss. Like those are I when I think of those guys, I think of, especially as a pair, I think of them, as, you know, you think of the seasons they ran the show for, which are great, but also more traditionalist, mostly. I think, like, any season of the Golden Years has weird episodes where totally weird stuff happens, but none of them, you know, they never get to the point where they're kind of exploring the boundaries of what the Simpsons are, like they do in 7-8. So this episode is, it feels strange that they wrote it, but they do both consider it one of their best. I like it. I like it a lot.
It's one of those times when they push the barriers and it comedy resulted. When other times they push the barriers, less comedy resulted.
Well, when we get back to the Al Jean years, the long modern trek of Al Jean.
Yeah.
The what's the term everyone uses? The, oh, what is it? Oh, I can't think of the word.
You mean the long tail? Or
No. His role, basically, now as a showrunner is, he is
as a hospice nurse, palliative care.
Oh God, that's not what I was going for. More of a kind of just toe the line, just keep it running, you know, as a.
Oh yeah. I think I know what you're trying to get at.
I can't think of the word though. It's too early in the morning probably for me. But that's it, and we will rank it at the end of the show. No submissions for my favorite episode. If you have a favorite episode, simply submit it to SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com, explaining why a certain episode is your favorite. I'll read it when we get to that episode. We can move on to our next segment. It's time for our comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments to the news group is where I'll comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people were talking about a week or two after an episode debuted, see what they thought about it, what the reviews were, and any other weird, interesting things I find. They either really liked it or they really didn't like it.
It feels like that we're down to two different types of episodes when it comes to the news group, either the ones that are super polarized or where everyone's like, yeah, it's about a B or a C.
It's very rare that we're seeing any more just like everyone's, it's a grand slam. It's very much like, there's plenty of people who love this. Even some people are saying this is their top in the top 10. Their personal top 10. So obviously they like it a lot. Other people are like, I don't like the music. I don't like Mary Poppins or Sherry Bobbins. I don't like, they changed the rules. I don't like it. And I'm like, okay. And I don't know. I think they're just these, they have certain expectations about what the Simpsons are. And they just, those expectations, because the show's only at that point gone for 8 seasons, they maybe think it will return to the thing what it was. And I think if you go by episode basis, sometimes it does in season 8. Like, there's plenty of season 8 episodes you could say were from season 4. But I think in general, they're pushing it the bounds of the show a little bit further. But there's still plenty of people who are loving it. And I think those people are a little bit more open about what their Simpsons is.
Well, it's one of those things where some people don't like change. Some people are open to change as long as it makes things better. But you're never going to, the people who don't like change, you're never going to convince them.
You can't convince someone to change their mind through rational fact when they got there through emotion?
Yes, exactly. And if there's one thing comedy, it rarely is, it's rational thought.
No,
comedy
is
in general.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is kind of raw reaction. Also, there's a gag in this episode about Grandpa using the remote control as thinking it's a phone and then using the iron as a phone. It's a reference to a classic joke, which someone pointed out on this group, but I thought it's bad enough for me to read. Guy goes to a doctor with two horribly burnt ears. The doctor asks him how it happened. So the guy says, "Well, I was doing the ironing when the phone rang, so I picked up the iron instead of the phone and burnt my ear." Doctor asks, "What happened to the other one then?" The guy says, "Wouldn't you know it? They call me right back."
Yeah.
Bad dad jokes just work their Matt's level. That's where we are.
That's true. Anything that makes fun of stupid people.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We can move on to our next segment. It is time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow.
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow.
The listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite Lenny/Carl quote? Again, tons of great answers, tons of responses. Appreciate everyone who takes the time. First up from Holly. Hey, Lenny, sending some outgoing mail? You know it. I'll probably send some tomorrow. I hear that from Dave. Oh, Homer's enemy has some great Lenny and Carl stuff. I'll go with this gem. That's the man who's in charge of our safety? It boggles the mind. It's best not to think about it. I do really like Lenny and Carl in Homer's Enemy a lot. From Lauren. Yeah. Hey, I hear we're going to Ape Island. Yeah, to capture a giant ape. I wish we were going to Candy Apple Island. Candy Apple Island? What do they do? What do they got there? Apes. But they're not so big. Rufus, when a helicopter crushes Lenny and Carl. Lenny, Carl, can I die first? I couldn't bear to watch you die. Sure, but hurry up. For Mike, from our last episode, actually. Hey, did you hear something? No. Did I? I don't know. The kind of Lenny and Carl as like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of Springfield is
exactly
I really like. Chris, Lenny voices a thought that crosses my mind daily. Please don't tell anyone how I live. That's pretty good. From Kevin, I just wanted to say this is Ned Flanders, my friend. What did he say? I don't know, something about being gay. Daniel, if you ask me, Muhammad Ali in his prime was much better than Analog Breaks. Yeah, but what about Johnny Mathis versus Diet Pepsi? Oh, I cannot listen to this again.
Poor Mo, he doesn't deal with them so often.
He really does. From Andy, the flames are headed straight for the flammable district. That's where our mom works.
Apparently they have the same mom.
Yeah, it's a confusing mess. From Tom, it's a secret. Shut up! Home really great. That's a more great Lenny and Carl in there. From Chris, which this is a very popular answer. My eye! I'm not supposed to get pudding in it! And then they do callbacks to it later. Always good. From Joel at Metal Peg 1971. Oh, but Mo! The dank! Yeah, don't get rid of the dank, Mo.
Dank is very important.
Alonzo 82. Hey, look, Homer's got one of those robot cars. And he crashes. One of those American robot cars. Elliot.
Don't have, dang it.
Not yet. We're getting there. Elliot at TweetyMan17. I can't tell where Carl ends and I begin. This is why people think we're gay.
When actually they're brothers.
Exactly. From the aforementioned Dankmus. I'm Lenny. This is Carl and Homer. I'm Lenny. By far is my favorite. Anytime repeated introductions. Yeah. From GU to Cypress GU. So long, Dental plan.
He needs braces.
Yeah, that's also very popular, dental plan. Matt, what is your answer?
Mine is actually when Marge comes to the plant to see Homer because they're going off for a weekend. I'm actually not sure what episode this is from. And Lenny and Carl go, how do you do, ma'am? And Lenny says, I hope this evening finds you well. And Marge responds, oh, put a sock in it, pervert. I don't know why, but it's just like she knows them so well.
Yeah, my answer is... is from Homer's Enemy. It is the Lenny and Carl kind of almost commiserating with Trent Grimes a little bit. You know, and he's just like, what world do we live in? They're like, yeah,
I'd say he's more like a duck.
Yeah,
pigs tend to chew.
That they're kind of just they're just calm observations about the insanity of Homer and how they live alongside of him is spectacular.
They've come to Springfield from the real world and just got used to it instead of going crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Next week's question: what is your favorite song lyric? We're looking for just a line from a song or two. You know,
it's gonna be tough.
Don't give me paragraphs. I don't need stanzas. Give me a verse. I'll post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Like us, follow us, you know, social media.
Yeah, social medias.
GIFs. Links.
Frinkiacs.
Yep, I like that Frinkiac. It's a pretty good thing. Hey, Matt. You know what time it is?
Oh, crap.
Oh, whatever. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I each challenge each other with 3 trivia questions. 1 easy, 1 medium, 1 hard. Try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season. Whoever loses has to record themselves singing a song of the winner's choosing. I am certainly not going to lose down by 13 points halfway through the season. I am totally in this. Matt, start us off. Give me an easy question.
All right, sir. Your easy question for this week. Who builds Lisa's self-tapping shoes in Last Tap Dance in Springfield?
Frank? Professor Frank?
Indeed, you are correct.
I'm like,
who in Springfield would do that?
I remembered it. It's just, I doubt myself now. I'm developing a complex.
Yeah.
That's what's happening here. I think
totally
I think I know answers, and then I'm like, well, do I know the answer? All these questions are coming from season 21's Boy Meets Curl.
I don't even remember that episode at all. All right, fair enough.
Your easy question.
Oh, curling. Gotcha. Okay, sorry.
Your first question.
Go ahead.
Homer and Marge play what sport in Boy Meets Curl?
Curling.
There you go. See, Matt, I gave you...
You know, barbell curling, right?
Yeah, that's... Yes, that is a sport. Barbell curling.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a sport.
No, it's not. Your medium question, sir. What is the name of the former child star who teaches Lisa to dance in Last Tap Dance in Springfield?
I know. Noises. I can picture her, and I can hear her. I cannot think of her name. You need a full name?
I need a full name. First and last.
I'm not going to get this right. She was a Judy Garland type. Patty Paulson.
You are so close. It is Vicky Valentine. You got the alliteration.
I knew it was alliterative, but I knew it was going to be like a short E ending in a neat E name, so I just did my best. But yeah, fool's errand. Your medium question. In Boy Meets Girl, Bart creates a phony mascot for the 2014 Olympics named what?
A phony mascot. What phony mascot? I remember the... Okay, I'm going to go with the only one I can remember, which was Fatov.
Yes, you're right. I hate you.
Oh, man. Because for some reason, I thought that was like a real one. Because Lisa collects pins in that episode, and I'm like, was that a real one? Or anyway, yeah.
All right, what's my hard question?
All right, so your hard question... What is the film that inspires Lisa to tap dance?
I don't know. Lisa's tap dance. They're like doing Martians. They're all dressed up in spacesuits, and half the kids are Martians, and the other half are...
Well, that's the show they do at the end. What is the movie she sees at the beginning that says?
Right. I don't know. Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
I'm sorry. It is Tango de la Muerte.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I will give you an extra 2 points if you can name the main character from that Lisa falls in love with.
Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
No, it is Lisa Bella.
Okay. That makes sense, but I did not remember that. Mm-hmm. Okay, your hard question. A fetal kick by Seymour. Cost Agnes what?
Fetal kick. Was it a gold medal in curling?
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
It's a gold medal in pole vault.
Pole vault, dang. All right, fair enough.
In the 1952 Summer Olympics.
While pregnant. Whew.
I mean, Serena Williams.
I mean, Seymour is now really old.
Serena Williams won a major.
That's true, but she wasn't that far along. Like, I don't think her baby could have kicked her.
That's true. Agnes is a tough lady.
She's a tough cookie.
She's a tough lady. I have some bonus questions for you, Matt.
Yes.
These are from John Winchester. These are all pretty random, even. What is the name of Mr. Burns' autobiography in Blood Feud?
Will There Ever Be a Rainbow?
That is correct. What is Ned Flanders' favorite popsicle flavor?
Ice? Unflavored?
Plain. So you're basically right. How much money did Krusty personally lose due to the Soviet boycott of the Olympics?
$44 million.
That is correct. What university did Apu graduate from, and how many students were in his class?
Caltech, Calcutta Technical Institute, and his graduating class of 7 million.
That is also correct. Finally, where is the play created by Smithers' Malibu Stacy the Musical first shown?
Oh, somewhere in Arizona. Cannot remember the city.
It's rather integral to the plot of the episode. The city.
The city?
Homer versus Dignity. Albuquerque Theater.
Oh, that's right. That was that one. Okay. Sorry. Nope, didn't get that one.
I really want to get myself an Albuquerque Isotopes jersey.
Yeah, that's a deep cut that only true fans will get.
Only true fans. That's right. Only true fans.
You know, those fake Simpsons fans.
Yeah, the fake Simpsons. I need... Matt, good. That's a merch idea. Fake Simpsons fan.
There you go.
We're going to make that t-shirt, and three people will buy it. That's it. You did a good job. as always, because you're some kind of inhuman trivia monster.
Sounds about right.
I mean, you haven't been exposed to Terra Genesis, but in all other ways, you are inhuman.
Well, neither has... Oh, wait. I probably shouldn't say that. That's still a fairly recent spoiler.
No. Well, you probably shouldn't broadcast it on... I'm sure the 10 people who listen to this and also are reading Inhumans comics would prefer not to be spoiled.
That's true. I mean, this comic came out, 6 months ago, but yeah. No.
Is it been collected in trade?
I believe so. The Karnak series?
Oh, well then, yeah, they probably... I don't think that's a spoiler, honestly. I think that's I think that's rather essential. Matt is now further ahead of me. This is great. I am already warming up my vocal cords, doing some exercises, some training. It's very, very important. We can move on to our final segment. Segment we end every single episode with. It's time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever. This part show where Matt and I rank the episodes categorically, so we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. I think this is, I don't know, where would you put this, Matt? Give me your thoughts.
I'm thinking top 20, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Okay, top 20. I would agree with It's not a perfect episode.
Maybe top 30. I would go top 30.
I would, yeah. I think it's, there are parts of it, like, I love all the Sherry Bobbin stuff in it. I love the songs. I love her dying at the end in the most brutal way possible. I think that the little bits of those television bits, I think, are the weakest part of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are the parts that have aged the most poorly. Like, aside from the itchy and scratchy Tarantino bit, all the other stuff is kind of filler. It doesn't really matter. It can be anything.
Right.
And I think that brings it down for me. What I remember about this episode when I'm thinking about it is the Sherry Bobbin stuff. When you're watching the episode, you go, oh yeah, the television. It's like very critic style stuff.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we need to add some time.
Not a hugest fan of most of that stuff. So I think that it brings it down a little bit for me. I still think it's very, very good. Is it better than Homer Loves Flanders?
Ooh. I really like Homer Loves Flanders. So, it's so hard. I would say yes on the strength of the songs and the Sherry Bobbins bits. And basically the meta commentary, I think, makes it slightly better.
Okay, is it better than Last Exit of Springfield, which is 29? Another classic.
It's another classic. I think it's easier for me to say yes to that one. Because Last Exit of Springfield is one of the greatest episodes, but this episode is more fun than that episode, I feel like.
Are you saying that the episode about unionizing isn't fun?
Well...
No? Okay. Yeah. Bart After Dark is 28. I think it's better than Bart After Dark. Is it better than Mother Simpson?
Oh, man.
And then Maggie Makes 3 after that?
I don't think it's better than Mother Simpson, to be honest.
I think it is. Because I think it's better than Mother Simpson.
You think so?
I think it's better than Mother Simpson and Maggie Makes 3. I think it's better than both of those episodes.
It is funnier, but man, Mother Simpson, it's tough.
Whenever we bring up Mother Simpson and both of Maggie Makes 3, they're right next to each other. Both those episodes are notable for their endings because they're really touching, really great endings of Simpsons episodes. But I think... Some of the parts leading up to those endings are less than that. Like, I don't want to make an episode just the most memorable part of it. I think we should try and think about everything in it. I think Mother Simpson and Maggie Makes 3 both have probably the two best endings of any episode. Like, if I was just ranking endings, I could put them number 1 and 2 in some order. But we're not ranking endings, we're ranking episodes. I think I would put it actually right above in Maggie Makes 3. I put this right below Lemon of Troy. I think Lemon of Troy does a lot of interesting things in the same way, and it kind of examining how Springfield works, how the Simpsons work, by showing us their neighbors. I think it is tighter as a whole than this episode. It doesn't have that filler stuff in it. I think even like the weird tiny character bits feel indispensable. They feel very important because you're like, wow, that's a neat, that little moment with Martin and Nelson, with Martin singing, is it feels important because you're like, we haven't seen those characters interact with each other very often, and seeing it feels special. Seeing Charles Bronson be Andy Griffith does not feel special. It feels
just cheap.
Wasted. But I don't know. I would put it right there, but if you want to put it somewhere like at, like in 26, 27, I'm not going to die on that hill. I think it's at this point we're very, I think it's very close. This is in that area. I'm not really going to fight over it.
It's in good company. Let's put it that way.
So 20, you want to do 26?
Let's do 26.
Okay. Okay. Copy paste.
That's hard. You don't want to type out supercalifragilisticexpialidocious?
I can't do that. I am incapable of spelling that out, so I'm going to copy paste. Yes. Number 26 on our list is Simpson Califragilisticexpialidocious Gruntius.
Good old annoyed Gruntius.
Annoyed Gruntius. Number one on our list is Cape Fear. Last on our list is Homer's Odyssey, number 156. Won't last there forever. What is our next episode, Matt? Already mentioned it.
Our next episode, as you mentioned, is Poochie.
Well, the Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie show.
Yeah.
Featuring Roy. The most notable of Simpsons characters.
It's true.
Very important. We need to get Roy. I think the entire podcast has been leading up to this point. I think we might, after Roy has...
He'll probably die after.
I mean, yeah. Right after Roy has been debuted, we might not stop. Like, what's the point? We've hit the pinnacle. Roy's appeared.
There you go.
Man, we don't need anything else. You can find this list, the best episode ever list, on our website is simply thesimpsonshow.com. Links to everything there, to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed. Links to every episode, downloadable and streaming. I'll repeat this again. The way our RSS feed works in our host, it only archives the last 100 episodes. I will be working towards a solution that will give us all of our episodes in our back catalog available on any podcast app. However, that will take a lot of hard work and a lot of time on my part. So it will not be, hopefully, by the end of this year, hopefully that will be done. But if you want to, and it's not an ideal solution, but if you do want to listen to our old episodes, you just have to go to the website. You can just browse it on your phone's browser, and you can stream it. You should be able to stream it through that. Again, not ideal, but it is a way to do it.
And if you love us, you do it.
Limits of love. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. Simple. Please check out my other podcasts, The Handsome Boys Comics Hour. It's about comic books and how they're terrible. And The Serial Fanaticist, which is about lots of stuff. The last episode was about The Prisoner. Rewatching The Prisoner. It's a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt does not...
We go back a couple episodes
and
listen to our Harry Potter.
Yeah, Matt, because Matt was on our my Harry... We're going to do all the Harry Potter books eventually. At least, I don't know. We're going to do all the main seven. I don't know about Fantastic Beasts and plays and all that
stuff. Yeah, because it's not really a book per se. We'll see what happens. See how hungry we are for more.
I'm not pledging my excitement already. Matt does not participate in social media unless a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. However, I have begun digging deep underground to place a whole bunch of ice cores so I can be communicated with through neutrino shots. So all you have to do is launch your satellite into space and just send a few trillion neutrinos, and the one or two that'll get through will obviously spell out a message in binary.
I don't know if you guys heard the sound of jets flying at like Mach 3 over my head, but that's what that sound was if you didn't hear it.
Oh, okay.
Just whoosh. Well then. Just whoosh.
That's true. I got the plans from Japan. They're totally legit.
You might as well, again, Matt, this is not your words. They might as well not. Mm. They're not in a language I understand.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
As Homer would say, nerd. I'm Robbie.
That's accurate. And I'm Matt.
And keep watching those episodes.
Shh.